this episode of Strange Magic, we get into Major Arcana number 7, the Chariot. Following the union we've achieved in the Lovers card, the Chariot helps us make progress, focus on our spiritual and material goals, and achieve them through disciplined effort. Buckle up, witches, because we're going in.
Just a reminder, our intention setting workshop for 2019 is open for enrollment right now.
By the time you're done taking this workshop with us, you will be able to think about more intimate ways to embody and work with a tarot card or tarot cards.
Your practice of the tarot is going to be deeper. You're going to have more tools in your toolbox for ritual. You're going to have much clearer intentions for how you want to open up next year. And
you will be able to identify and think about ways to really release and let go some of the gunk and accumulations of 2018.
Sign me up for that workshop. I'm excited about this.
For more information, you can click the link in our show notes, or you can go to modernwomen.bigcartel.com.
And just a reminder, this makes a great gift for anyone who is getting gifts for their friends or their loved ones or themselves. So please sign up. We're excited to work with you.
It's going to be great. Here at Strange Magic, Amanda and I talk about our views on tarot and the ways in which we practice magic.
And we understand that other people have different ways of practicing and different interpretations of the tarot, and that's totally okay.
Take what you'd like and leave the rest. This episode of Strange Magic is brought to you by Angela Mary Magic. Do you ever need an experienced witch to whip you up a spell? How about enchanted supplies and seasoned assistants accessing your inner knowing? Angela Mary is just that witch. She offers a beautiful array of magical supplies and services. Her most tender and personal offering of her life is Moon Coven, a year and a day of spellbound rites. For all the other divine details, head over to www.angelamarymagic.com. That's magic with a K. Lucky Strange Magic listeners receive 70% off of Moon Coven. Just use the offer code STRANGE.
So it's time for listener mail. I got a very enlightening email from Julie Williams, who was writing to discuss my use of the term differently abled in our inclusivity episode. As a person with a disability, she was bristling at that a little bit, but she wrote me a very sweet message about it. And I thought it was really interesting. And so I wanted to bring it up with everybody, with her permission, of course, because I thought it would be something that we'd all be interested in finding out more about, because I didn't know that the term differently abled was a problem. And so Julie Williams basically suggested the following: that I do further research into the disability community, particularly into topics like people first language and the social versus medical models of disability. Of course, opinions differ, she says, but using language like differently abled obscures that the world is often a harsh place for people with disabilities, and that is not a benign fact. Nancy Mayer's essay on being a cripple is a particularly good resource for the ways that this language poses a problem. So I did, in fact, read the essay suggested on being a cripple. And I have to say, I was very surprised and enlightened to hear that people with disabilities might prefer to be called a cripple. That's the reason why I even used the word differently abled in the first place, because it felt like even aggressive or insulting to use the word disabled. And au contraire, I learned a lot by reading this essay where basically Nancy Mayers talks about how the words differently abled obscure the fact that people with disabilities really suffer under those disabilities. And it makes it seem like, oh, everybody just has different abilities. Like we all just are different. It's a rainbow. It's just slight variations that make things, you know, gives us all a different flavor. But in this essay, she has multiple sclerosis, and she talks about how excruciating and challenging it is for her. And she wants that to be honored and acknowledged and seen. And the use of the term differently abled like obscures her suffering. And I didn't get a chance too much to go into the social versus medical models of disability because I just got this email a few days ago, but I did research it briefly. And in that discussion, the people in the disabled community speak about wanting to use the term person with a disability rather than disabled person. And then there's all this stuff about how the problem with having a disability is not so much that you have the disability, but it's the way that society treats you, like not being able to get into a building if you have a wheelchair, for instance. Sure. So there's all of that going on. So I'm very grateful to Julie Williams bringing this to my attention. And I have to say that I would not be comfortable calling anyone a cripple. The woman in the essay says that she also doesn't call other people cripples, but she prefers to be called a cripple herself. Having read all of this, I think I will start using the term disabled rather than differently abled. Although, and Julie Williams, the person who wrote me about this, mentioned this, you know, everybody has different opinions on it. So it's not like I get the check mark from the disabled person about what term I use, and then I can just move merrily on my way. I was in discourse with Julie, the person who wrote me this, and her Instagram handle is juliet.echo.whiskey, and she writes a lot about disability studies on her social media page. So if you're interested in this, then you can look her up. I'm also going to put that in the show notes with the essay on being a cripple. I'm going to link to that. It's a PDF you can download. And I really encourage everybody to read it because it's really fascinating and it totally opened my eyes to something that I just was not at all aware of. So thank you, Julie, for your message.
Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Sarah.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm super excited to talk about The Chariot.
Amanda, this is, again, one of these cards that I think we could talk about for 3 hours. We're going to try to get it all in just to podcast format. But yeah, I love this card. I'm sure that you have things about it you love as well.
I certainly do. And I just feel like every card is my favorite card.
It's true. It's totally true. You know, when thinking about The Chariot, a couple of things came up.
Tell me.
Okay. The first caveat is that tarot cards are just fundamentally not bad or good.
All women.
This got brought up in this card in particular because, you know, a lot of the traditional definitions of the Chariot is victory, success, you did it, you're moving, you're going. And having come out of a Chariot year, I'm just about the end of my Chariot year, it was a bumpy ride. Mm. So I think that it's important when we are either reading for ourselves or reading for other people, we need to see the cards as a spectrum or as sort of like a holistic wheel, not just, oh, you got the Empress, so you're good to go, or, you know, oh, you got the Tower, so things are all going to be destroyed. But to go into the nuances of the card, what do you think about that?
Well, I love that so much. And what I love to think about is that the tarot and other archetypal energies are like forces of nature, right? So gravity, neither bad nor good. Velocity, neither bad nor good. Destruction, even, you know, decay, not a bad thing. If we didn't have it, we'd all be like suffocating in some pretty gross stuff. So I love that you bring that up because I think it's really important that it's really just sort of to relate it back to this idea of energy or physical forces. It's really how you use it and whether or not you're using it as a tool or if it's getting in your way or inhibiting you in some way. And I know later you're going to bring up this shadow stuff. And to me, it really relates to that because I think we grow just as much from dealing with our shadow when everything is all roses for us and we're just like smooth sailing. We don't really grow as much. So I think it's all in the way you look at it.
Yeah. Tarot is about living, right? We have a reading. But when the reading is over, we have to go and kind of do the work and see how these archetypes or this energy wants to play out or is already playing out in our life. And honestly, depending on where we are personally in our lives, that could also really flavor our experience of an archetype or of a card. Say you are experiencing the energy of the Chariot at one point in your life, might feel completely different than, you know, at another point of your life, depending on kind of where you are in your life, right? Mm-hmm. So The second caveat that I wanted to talk about is the number of the card does not mean it is more evolved or less evolved or better. Yes, of course, cards build on one another. Yes, of course, there are patterns and spirals of energy. But I've heard people say, in particular with the Chariot or the first line of the tarot, as it were, that it's somehow unevolved. Or, well, you could stay in the, some people stay in the first line of the tarot their whole lives, or some people never get past Chariot. And that is just, I see you chuckling, so I want you to kind of chime in there. You're chuckling.
Well, I think it's just, I just think it really speaks more about where they are in terms of how they perceive the world around them, that they see it as a hierarchical structure. And of course, yes, the tarot was created in a very hierarchical system. And the major arcana were considered a hierarchy when they first were invented. But I love that we are re-envisioning that. And I so love and completely agree with the idea that the numbers as they proceed through the major arcana 1 through 21 and 0 are not better. Like, the Magician is not worse than the Moon, right? They're just different stages of development. I love that you use the word evolution, because for me, evolution implies a response to the environment rather than something being better than something else. So mammoths are not better than dinosaurs. They're just responding to the environment in the way that is appropriate for them. What do you think of that?
Yeah, you just hit my little nail on that little head softly with some velvet covering on it.
So let's start with the card itself. It is Major Arcana 7, which is the number of initiation, where we see an armored figure in a chariot drawn by two, sometimes four beasts, either horses or sphinxes or griffins. In the Thoth deck, it's our old friends, the four evangelists, or the bull, the eagle, the sphinx, and the lion, which sometimes also represent the four fixed signs of the zodiac: Taurus, which is the bull, Scorpio, which is the eagle, Aquarius, which is the sphinx, and Leo, which is the lion. And the fixed signs represent the energy of development, like when plants establish their roots so they're strong enough to survive on their own. And to a large degree, that is what this card is doing, is helping the individual establish him, her, or themselves. I also want to note that usually there's a carapace or a canopy of stars or the night sky above the head of the rider. And the carapace is protective awning, like a shell, which associates it with the sign of Cancer and also the magic of the celestial universe in general. Often you'll see a crab somewhere in this image, since Cancer is the sign that corresponds to this card. Also, the chariot corresponds to the word kath in the Kabbalah, meaning fence. So there's a sense of enclosure or protection or separation relating to this card. For me, what's interesting about this card visually is that the chariot most often seems at rest, which is not how we normally think of chariots. The rider is sitting there confident and restful, almost as if they've won the race already and are being presented with their trophy. The charioteer is a champion, championing causes and standing up for those more vulnerable than themselves.
One of the reasons why I think I personally love this card so much is I love, love, love the visual representation that the artist Pamela Coleman-Smith chose when creating this deck for Mr. Waite.
Mm-hmm.
Writer was the publisher, right? Mm-hmm. Mr. Waite was the art director, as it were.
Yeah.
Yes, Amanda, you're talking about the Thoth deck. The charioteer looks really fierce. You're like, that charioteer is going to win. Do not mess with this charioteer. The chariot is going places. But you also don't really want to snuggle with that figure, right? You kind of want to get out of the way. And what I love about the Pamela Coleman-Smith rendition is that we can, one, see the person's face. And all of the symbolism of the cards previous to the chariot is kind of hidden within the symbolism, right? With the Magician, we have the charioteer holding a wand, right? With the High Priestess, we have this beautiful canopy of stars that you spoke about earlier. With the Empress, we have the crown on the head. The Emperor is seen as the armor, also the four, the square in the middle of the armor. The Hierophant, I've heard, are the two moons on the shoulder of the armor. The lovers are the lingam yoni that's on the shield in the front of the chariot. And I also sort of interpret the sphinxes as the lovers. And to me, what I think is interesting about this, not just that it's like a little stroke of artistic genius, but that it also echoes this idea of the card as being almost a performer. Performance and integration are themes that I'm going to talk about later on with this card. And we can see that visually.
Yeah, what's so cool is how all the different people who've made decks interpret the decks differently. It's like when people do different covers of the same song and you get something different out of each version of the song. In one of my favorite decks, the Elemental Tarot deck, this card is called Victory and embodies the energy of ambition. And in it, you see a figure with a sword or a wand brandished above their head, flying through the sky on a winged sphinx carrying a torch like the kind passed around at marathons. I mean, in short, we can really think of the chariot as a car or a vehicle that gets us from one place to the next, even if it is on a winged sphinx. But both the road conditions and how we drive determine the quality of our trip. But in essence, this card means move ahead, go forth, onward.
Yeah, totally. Those sphinxes, you know, I'm really curious now to look up when the Elemental Tarot was created, because what I've seen historically is decks that were made pre Rider-Waite Coleman Smith all had horses pulling their chariot. And Pamela Coleman Smith, the artist, put two sphinxes in front of the chariot. And I think sphinxes are a really interesting addition to this card because, one, well, we all know that the Order of the Golden Dawn was obsessed with all things magic, one of those being this idea that ideas from the tarot came from ancient Egypt. So, of course, we see the sphinxes being seen then. We also know that traditionally, a lot of the Roma people practiced tarot in Europe and Eastern Europe, which is sort of where this horrible slur that we now know, the G word, I'm not going to say it, comes from Egyptian. So you can kind of fill in the blanks there. So we kind of see the sphinxes pointing back to the origin and the history. But what I think is really interesting about the sphinxes as an addition to this version is that traditionally sphinxes were seen as protectors, right? They would protect tombs. They were gatekeepers. They also were sort of these riddlers or mystery makers where you had to answer a riddle in order to get past the sphinx. And I think it's this interesting, more magical addition to this card that we see in this version of the deck.
Yeah, so it's really interesting to think about how it changes the card if you use a horse versus a sphinx, right? Because like I think of the sphinx as being stationary, and I love what you're saying about their keepers of the mystery, right? The riddle of the sphinx is what we think about when we think about a sphinx, and the idea of like passing through, like a, if you answer the riddle, then you can move to the next phase of your life, which is really what the card is about. Also, I'm thinking, what does it mean if it's horses? You know, horses are also vehicles, but they're more through like muscular power. But I also love how horses are also herd animals, whereas I see sphinxes as these mysterious, usually they come in pairs, figures that guard tombs or sacred places. And I think of horses out there on the wild plains doing their muscular biz across the land.
Dun, 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 dun.
Let's talk about what makes this card so great. I'm actually going to start off talking a little bit about the warrior aspect of this card, which I know that a lot of us don't think of warriors as being so great. Oh my gosh, I have so much to say about that, but I'm just going to be brief. Oftentimes this card means that you are becoming a warrior, you're being called to become a warrior, which doesn't mean to become some berserker foaming at the mouth, spouting your aggression all over the place. But I mean it more in the sense of the martial artist who practices her craft, her discipline, adopts the codes of conduct, and is professional. Like when I think of martial art, I think of it as a way of sort of harnessing the power of the self and the body. And I also think of warriors, like I know our friend Eliza Swan, who's another witch, talks about how we should eradicate the war terminology from our language, which I really agree with and think is true. And on the other hand, I also know that we live in a world where there is violence and people are going to try and do violence to people that we care about. And that standing up for what we believe in and kind of coming to the defense of people that we care about is really important. So this card might be calling you to develop a code of conduct to marshal your own powers and develop your field of study, your expertise, whether it's the cello, the academic discipline of sociology, or even the discipline of parenting. To study a discipline is to approach the subject with rigor. But what does rigor mean? I think of rigor as challenging yourself and your way of thinking about a specific subject, like giving yourself hard challenges, riddles to solve, and then using your discipline to find innovative ways of solving them using your specific skill set. So being disciplined might then mean waking up early to exercise or meditate or practice your technique for an hour each morning. Maybe it's practicing the cello or practicing Tai Chi. It might mean taking note of where your weaknesses are and working to improve them, because that's also about approaching your discipline with rigor. So for instance, like I'm a writer, so I might try and notice what about my writing is strong. Maybe it's an ability to communicate mood or atmosphere. And what about my writing is weak? Might be creating a narrative arc. So if I know that that is a weakness, then I can start to really focus in on shifting that or changing that. So working to our disciplines, thinking about our discipline, working like martial artists, I think that's a big one for me.
Absolutely. I also think of the discipline of discipline, just practicing. Everything is a practice. That's basically it, right? We're just all practicing. And on that point of work and discipline and repetition and consistency, this card marks a time of hard work, or you're being called to have to sort of focus and get disciplined. I think of this card as this moment of I'm working. And then all of a sudden, boom, it's the moment of success. Like you get a big break, but we all know that there's no such thing as an overnight success, right? There's no such thing as like you try it the first time or you make two phone calls and then like the second person says yes. This is like we're knocking on doors, we're honing our craft, we're getting up off the horse, the chariot topples over, we have to pick it up again and keep going and keep going. Sometimes I think this card can be this sort of archetype of looking really good and making it look all really good on the outside, but people don't really know challenges or hardships that you had to get through sort of on the inside, right? I think of like the magician has come out of her garden. She's learned all these lessons. She's fallen down. She's gotten up. She's had to prove herself over and over and over again until she gets to the point where she has nothing left to prove to other people. So a lot of times I see this card is coming up for clients when they no longer have to prove anything to anyone else. And now they have to kind of sit with themselves and ask themselves, okay, well, what now? If I'm the only one here in the room, if I'm the only one that has to make myself happy, what do I really want? It's like, now what? Is like a great question to ask yourself. It's like, okay, you've worked really hard. What's going on? I just think of this idea of success. Are you looking for it? Have you achieved it? And it wasn't what you thought you wanted it to be, right? Sometimes this card just means, congratulations, you did it. Great, you did something really challenging, no matter what it was. And it's a period of culmination. And now it's time for you to maybe coast because it's the chariot. You've been driving. You've been going. Do you need to coast? And other times you have to give yourself some time to catch up to yourself. We're often chasing definitions of success that we've been brainwashed by culture to achieve. University degree and student loan debt, a monogamous long-term relationship, a nice car. This card is really asking us to define, revisit, and redefine what success means to you.
Oh my gosh, when you talk about that, what I really think of is athletes. Like I think of the charioteer very much like an athlete. Think of what goes into being an athlete, you know, that training, that daily practice, that getting up in the cold, that getting up when you're sore, that getting up when you don't feel like doing it. You know, I love to watch runners for instance, in the Olympics, and that just like focus on their faces and how like when they start running, everything else falls away, right? Like it's just them and the ground, and you can just see like their competition falls away. It's not about their competition. It's about them pounding the pavement and feeling the force, like the force in the Star Wars kind of sense, flowing through them. It's about getting out of the way of your own blocks, you know? So many runners talk about how the most important things to being a runner are putting your running shoes on. Like, you probably know this. Like, anybody who ever, like, goes to the gym or whatever has a practice like that. Often, if you can just get your shoes on, you can go for a run. It's the hardest part is to get your shoes on. And then they also say that just believing that you can and will succeed, no matter how many times you failed, is a huge part of being a runner. The gold medalist, Jackie Joyner Kersee, says, "The glory of sport comes from dedication, determination, and desire. Achieving success and personal glory in athletics has less to do with wins and losses than it does with learning how to prepare yourself so that at the end of the day, whether in the track or in the office, you know that there is nothing more you could have done to reach your ultimate goal." So you just are showing up with your best. And that's what's really important. And we can also think of the spirit flowing through with the athlete, and all she needs to do is get out of the way. Like I said before, Becky Stark, one of my favorite singers from Lavender Diamond, she has this amazing voice, and she talks about how she feels like her job is just to get out of the way of her voice, you know, just to open up her throat as a channel. And I see that as being sort of the process of the chariot.
I love that so much. You know, as you were talking, Amanda, it reminded me of my brother, who is a personal trainer, a fitness teacher, and runs his own gym. And one of his favorite things to say when he's teaching a class, in fact, he said it this morning when I was taking his Spin2Go class, for those of you in LA.
I want to go. It's really fun.
We'll all go sometime. It'll kick your booty, but yes, it's really fun. But he always says, it's only impossible until you do it. So it's that idea of, you know, the mind integrating. And that's another theme for me with this card is integration. And I love that you brought up this idea of channel and getting out of the way of spirit, because I really do see this card as integration. Integration is a powerful component to any artistic discipline that we're doing, to any challenging task we have to do. We have to integrate our lessons. We have to integrate messages from the divine. We have to integrate all that we've kind of learned. And that's where I think in the imagery, the charioteer has the heavens above them and protecting them. It's sort of like when you're right and aligned with spirit, like you can really go far and they'll really protect you. I also think of the integration of the shadow. When we don't integrate our shadow, it can be really harmful to us later. And we'll talk about that in the actual shadow part of it. It's the last card on the first line of the arcana, and right below it is the Master Alchemist, Temperance. So I think we're getting a little taste with the chariot of what alchemy can kind of look like, albeit a bit more practical. It's true, it's a bit more practical. But I think about, okay, I really like gardening and I like writing. What if I did a gardening blog? So sometimes when it comes up for you, you can ask yourself, what do I need to integrate? What are two separate things I'm interested in or that I'm really good at? And how do I combine them into a powerful, unstoppable force?
Which I see you doing every day.
Oh, Amanda.
So the horses for me represent our libidinous, desirous, anxious, angry impulses. These are not the granny nags at the petting zoo, because those kinds of horses couldn't get the job done. Like if you're going to drive a chariot, you're not going to get it with the little donkey chewing cud and like squatting and like digging her feet in the dirt. You're going to get a horse that's wild and nasty and spitting fire. And for me, that represents all the things about ourselves, like, for instance, our jealousies or our anxieties. But it's like that fierceness. So whether we're racing horses or huskies, you know, racing beasts are fierce and wild and dangerous creatures, because cuddly runts don't win the race.
Put that on a bumper sticker.
They don't pull sleds. Like, they don't put cuddly runts at the front of the sled. What I mean by that is that we can think of our fears and anxieties. Mm-hmm. Normally, we think of them as bad things. Mm. But really, you know, if we can marshal them, if we can harness that energy, like anxiety is just excitement.
Yeah, isn't that saying like anxiety is just excitement without breath?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. If we can re-envision the way that we think of anxiety, we can use it as something that can pull us towards accomplishing our goals. It's really about grit. I mean, I see the chariot as really being about grit. Your passions, your fears, or anxieties are all things that give you grit, that propel you, that help advance you towards your desired goal. So when you get the chariot in a reading, you are being encouraged to not be afraid of your ambitions, to act boldly. When you focus on your goal, you can achieve anything. You are a champion runner, and the chariot is your vehicle, so you can move forward.
I love that so much, specifically because, you know, anyone who's ever going to try to do anything is going to feel anxiety. Anyone who's ever trying something different or new or putting themselves out there or going for something they really believe in, there's going to be days where you feel panicked, days where you feel low and depressed. But if you can kind of harness that energy into a practice, chariot can kind of help guide us through the kind of bumpy bits of the road. You know, this is a super traditional meaning of the card, but we can't not talk about it, right? The chariot brings up ideas of travel, comings and goings. You know, obviously there could be literal travel or movement. Maybe you're changing jobs, maybe you're moving into a different place, so on and so forth. But there's also a metaphoric movement to this card, being ready for a departure, being ready to go beyond where you've been, being primed for it as a result of all of your hard work, as a result of all of your dedication, as a result of the discipline of the everyday, of life as practice. So I think about when this comes up, really trying to connect with your own spiritual high-mindedness of asking yourself, where am I ready to go beyond? I had these ideas about who I was or what I did, or maybe other people boxed me in and told me that I was a secretary, but really I'm an amazing award-winning chef in my mind. You know, where am I ready to kind of go beyond in behavior, in mindset, in self-discovery, sometimes in spiritual pursuits, because this does correlate with seven, which kind of vibrates with sort of spiritual evolution and all of those things. So if this card comes up and you are considering some kind of risk or some kind of change, this really is a nudge to try to go for it.
Yes, yes, yes to all of that. You know, one of the things that I like to do when I'm spacing on the meaning of a card is I find that thinking about their correspondences, their astrological correspondences or any other correspondences are really helpful for me. So if I know the meaning of a sign, for instance, it gives me a place to start with a card if I'm just like, I don't remember. For a long time, I didn't get the chariot's correspondence to Cancer. I was like, Cancer is that nurturing, loving, creative energy. Why would it be associated with this warrior space? But now I see that the chariot is a warrior who comes out in protection and service of those that she loves, which I know Cancers do, like you, Sarah. Cancer is associated with protection, refuge, and safety because Cancer is all about family, your people. And we might also say it's about your values and protecting and serving what you love by working with focus and diligence on behalf of what you love. So, for instance, the educator and racial justice advocate, Layla Saad, she just recently published a free workbook called Me and White Supremacy, which I encourage all white and white passing folks out there to download, do, and PayPal Layla for. She says that she does this work on behalf of Black, Indigenous people of color that she loves so fiercely. She is facing difficulty and exhaustion and stress like every day, but she's doing it because of her love for her people. And to me, that's one of the things that's really represented by this card, coming out and doing work on behalf of the people that you love.
I love that. I also, as you were talking, I thought about something I wanted to bring up that I haven't yet about this card, and this idea of boundaries. When you're trying to do something really hard, you have to have boundaries both around your work, around who gets to engage and collaborate with you. It's literally called the chariot. The chariot in this case, yes, it's the vehicle, but it's also protecting the charioteer from any harm, right? Mm. It's both taking them somewhere and protecting the person as well. So I think about, as you were talking about, cancer in the shell, and like there's always this metaphor of taking your home with you. If it wasn't a crab, it was a scarab or a turtle, you know, that were associated with the sign of cancer. We think about protection.
Okay, so I'm going to piggyback on that a little bit. So cancer is a cardinal water sign. So that means it's the instigator water sign. It's the one that sort of breaks out of the water sign gates. And water signs are all about emotion, relationships, connection. So we can think of the chariot also, and doing the work of the chariot, as forging new ways to be in relationship and new ways to connect with one another. So that activist work, that work on behalf of racial justice, all of that work is doing the work of forging new ways to have relationships.
I love that so much, you know, and when you are doing really hard, challenging work, wow, do you need boundaries? Energetic, emotional, actual.
I learned so much from you about boundaries. You are a queen of boundaries and I admire them.
I have to be, or else I would shrivel into a puddle and waste away.
I'm going to take your boundary workshop.
I will give it to you for free.
Thank you.
So another thing I wanted to talk about before we move on to the fun shadow and the fun pop culture and the fun magic, the chariot can bring up the idea of the persona. One of my favorite quotes from Claude Cahun: under this mask, another mask, I will never be finished removing all these faces. Famous quote. The word comes from the Latin word persona, referring to the masks worn by Etruscan mimes. It's a Jungian archetype. Our personas are the way we present ourselves to the world. They are the character traits we choose to show others, whether it's conscious or unconscious. It can be sometimes a performance of some kind, right? So maybe this card is suggesting you need to adapt a different persona. You can ask, are your insides matching your outsides? Jung said that the persona was a kind of mask, right? So we can kind of think about the kinds of masks we're choosing to present. And then there's the danger when we're overly identifying with the persona. It can become so fragile that one poke, one misstep will make the whole ego come crumbling and tumbling down. So sometimes a positive aspect of this card is ego death in a good way. Like, what do you need to let go of? What do you need to detach yourself from? Are you overly identifying yourself as a poet? Have you overly identified yourself with some aspect of your career or achievement or ambition or even just a character trait? We all do that. Like, well, I'm stubborn, or, well, I'm such a nice person, or whatever. We talked about evolution earlier in this podcast. So what part of you needs to evolve so that you can grow and change and move forward?
And be adapted to your environment, which is the purpose of evolution. Hear, hear. So breaking into the shadow realm, I just want to go back with the shadows for a moment to our favorite subject, the libidinous horses and sphinxes.
Our favorite subject.
We love libidinous horses. Anyway.
Put that on a bumper sticker.
We have so many bumper stickers. Yeah. We're like those people.
Our bumper sticker line.
We're like those cars with all the bumper stickers. Okay. Anyway. So what do I mean about this? Right. So we were talking about how they can propel you. They can drive you. But the thing is, they can also run you off the road. Like, if those libidinous horses, your passions, your desires, your anxieties are all running in different directions, your chariot's going to end up on the side of the road in a ditch spinning its wheels. And so this is like a serious risk. We're not playing here.
It's danger zone territory.
It's danger zone. Like, you can burn out. People who are really going through a serious chariot phase, if they burn their candle at both their ends, they can get really sick. You know, they can get in accidents. They can crash and burn. So it's really important that you get enough sleep when you're getting this card, you know, that you're asking for help. You're not pulling out your cell phone while you're driving because you're like, I need to work so hard. I need to send this text right now. Like, don't do that. Like, there's some serious shadow side to this card that is real.
Totally. And what you were saying just reminded me of like body as vehicle, right? Body as vehicle. And that's really important to think about. Absolutely. Going back to this idea of the danger of too much ego or the danger zone, you know, earlier in the podcast, in the magician episode, I believe it was, I talked about, you know, with some people, it's developing and working on a healthy and strong ego is a really good thing. It's a really positive thing for people who are insecure or people who've been told or that they're not anything or they're not worth anything. We need to have a strong ego. I'm not like anti-ego, okay? But when we have too much ego, we're the charioteer in the chariot moving so fast that we can't see the forest for the trees. We're steamrolling. We're not taking into account not only other people's needs, but maybe even our own needs, right? And when we have too much ego, we really need to preserve our face, so to speak. So it actually ends up weakening us. We are not able to be vulnerable. We're not able to develop really intimate connections with other people if we're just really concerned about the outer shell of who we are.
Hear, hear. I second those emotions. I also wanted to talk about how, like, let's say you got the chariot reversed. So maybe it's implying a shadow of being a lack of chariot energy. So that might be like a lack of discipline, not enough use of will, kind of a lack of rigor, not challenging yourself to really answer the difficult questions, going with the easiest option all the time. It can also be, conversely, a sort of overabundance, like you were saying, of that ego, like obsession, single-mindedness, workaholism. So let's say, for instance, you get this card in reverse in a relationship reading. Is it, you know, that you're so focused on work or you're not taking, I know that this is a complaint my lovers frequently give to me, is that like, I'm always like, 5 more minutes working, 5 more minutes working, and 5 minutes turns into 2 hours. And they're like, we were going to watch a show, we were going to have dinner, and now you're too tired.
Another thing that you reminded me of on a potential reversal of this card is just needing to move the F on. Like, move on. Let it go. Let's keep it going. She apologized. Okay, she got in an accident. She was late. Like, chill out. Let's just drop it and let's keep it moving. There can be a sort of stagnancy of getting stuck in a rut, so to speak. Maybe your chariot wheels have gotten in that kind of rut of really being rigid and not taking other people into account and just needing to move forward and drop something.
Totally. I love this chariot metaphor. It's so helpful when we literally think of what a chariot does. Like, it's really easy then to make sense of the card. I'm also thinking about, like, in terms of motivating horses or sphinxes. If you happen to have some of those
in your backyard,
in your ranch,
your Sphinx ranch,
I want one of those. That's when we have our commune. We'll also be a Sphinx ranch. But yeah, like, are you motivating your Sphinx by slapping it on the butt with a whip, or do you have some carrots? I don't know. Maybe
they're you gently rubbing its mouth? Yeah.
Some things are more, like, honey is more motivating.
I love that. I love that. The last piece that I wanted to talk about with the shadow here is imposter syndrome. So I know we talked about Academia and the Hierophant episode, which you haven't listened to. I suggest you go back and do so. But I think about how in academia, a lot of the time, we have a whole lot of incredibly intelligent, incredibly insecure people just competing for ego's sake or for some sort of like power dynamic and not actually wanting to sit with one another, engage, move each other forward in collaborative, very pro-chariot kinds of ways. So this card in shadow, we can think about, again, are you just doing something to prove to someone else, or are you connecting with your higher self and integrating messages and learnings so that you can move all of us forward?
Yes. All right, so let's pop. Let's go into pop culture. Let's go into current events related to this card. Not so current. I'm thinking of...
You're like ancient Greece.
Ancient Greece.
60 BC.
No, but I do think always of Ben-Hur, right? Like that scene with Charlton Heston. I know we're all bummed by him, but like really that look on his face where he's like pounding at that horse. We love horses and one should not pound at them, but I think of that. I just do. Okay, I really just do. Also, my client this morning, I was like, what do you think of when you think of the chariot? And what popped in her mind was the, I forget.
Pumpkin.
The pumpkin in Cinderella. That is a vehicle that leads Cinderella from servitude to liberation. And we're going to say the prince is her animus or yang polarity that she taps into to liberate herself. But also interestingly about the pumpkin is the pumpkin is kind of a gift of the fairy godmother, right?
Spirit.
And her animal allies, right? Which is the unconscious. So I think the vehicle speaks to connecting with spirit in order to liberate oneself.
I'll buy it.
Thank you.
I will buy that for 2,000, Amanda.
Yes.
Do you have any other ones? Because I have a few that are, but I want to hear you.
Oh, God. I have a lot. I have the fox and the little prince. You know how the fox like begs the little prince to tame him? And he's like, please tame me. Show up every day at the same time. It'll take a long time. But show up and every day bring me food. And then I'll be so sad if you leave because of the color of the wheat. But it'll make the color of the wheat so beautiful. Maybe he says corn. But the point is, the idea of taming is about showing up every day consistently, rain or shine. Also think of Falcor from The Neverending Story. Everybody's favorite dragon, who also looks like Carolyn, our producer's.
Bunny pup.
Bunny
Muppet
pup.
Bunny pup.
Of course, Chariots of Fire. Ooh, True Grit, that movie True Grit. Offred from The Handmaid's Tale. She's like really living through some stuff and staying focused on her goal. I also think of civil rights leaders like Ida B. Wells, who was born enslaved as a child, lost both of her parents to yellow fever, but was also a founding member of the NAACP. And started a free speech newspaper and was an investigative reporter and tireless human rights activist. I also think of Harvey Milk, Gloria Steinem, Fela Kuti, and of course, Malala.
I love Malala. You know Malala is a cancer son.
Is she?
Mm-hmm. First up, we have Ariana Grande. She's sweet. She's strong. She seems to really know herself. She's a touring musician. And her latest song is called Thank You. Next. She's not afraid to move on, folks.
Exactly.
She's We're a cancer inspired. Son. The next up, I have Solange. I feel like so much of her genius work is about creating a home for herself, her art, and the art of contemporary African-American artists and musicians, as well as a place for them to be seen. And with her record label, Saint Heron, she also integrates. So she does fine art that will be done in the form of like installations that then she'll also utilize in her stage shows. So that's like this idea of taking, oh, I'm an artist, but I'm also a musician. So I'm actually, Carolyn is also like that.
She our, is so much
our
like
producer.
That.
She is a you maker have to check out and her. Artist.
Her Instagram page. Carolyn yeah. Pennypacker Riggs.
Carolyn, you're kind of like the chariot when I'm thinking about it in that way. My other people that I had, Frida Kahlo, she was literally armored at one time because of her injuries. She took her pain and she made art of it. She actually even made art of her armor. She also took a popular Western style of painting surrealism and she made it her total own with strong references to her own life, traditional indigenous Mexican culture, as well as her beloved communism. She took really separate ideas and she departed onto her own path. She also had a very strong public persona and took great pains to present herself in a very particular and unique way. Also, Cancer Sun.
I went to the Frida Kahlo Museum and there was an exhibit up of her clothes and it was so moving and heartbreaking and beautiful to see these like boots that she had to wear that tormented her so much or these braces that she had to wear around her back that she painted on like with dragons and these fierce symbols and flowers. And she'd made these essentially these vehicles of torment for her into these amazing costumes, persona that she adopted. And it was just made me want to fall on my knees in gratitude for all that she has contributed to this world.
She's incredible. Last but not least, I have Mr. Carl Jung. I wrote for Carl Jung, Tangible Alchemy. Mr. Jung brought so many ideas to language for the field of psychology and human development and understanding. I spoke earlier in this episode about the persona. Here we are in the tarot world talking about archetypes. Jung really coined a lot of these terminologies that, of course, existed before he coined them, but he was the first person to get into trying to name and explain. He coined the idea of the shadow, synchronicities we owe to Mr. Jung, anima, animus. He also coined the terms introversion and extroversion and identified the four basic personality types that many psychologists and online quiz generators use to this day. So he's done a lot for human development. And another chariot tone that the life of Jung represents to me personally is that in his own life, when he was alive presenting these ideas, so many of his contemporaries put him down because of his interest in the occult and yoga and Buddhism, in things that weren't deemed scientific or rational by really horrible, boring, white Western men. Even in his own life, he had so many detractors that weren't willing to take him seriously, but he forged on and kept going and kept working. And the last thing I want to share, just because we talked about home and we talked about protection, inscribed above the door in one of Jung's houses was the Latin sentence, translates to, called or not called, God is present.
I mean, if you're going to write something on your house, could be that.
Or it could be libidinous horses only.
Right. Horses with honey.
You want to talk about spell work? Magic?
Yeah,
magic,
let's just drop a few spell bombs in there. So speaking of libidinous horses, I'm thinking about working with horses or abused animals. I had my stepmother's daughter has like a nonprofit where she rescues wild Mustangs that are going to be culled like in Utah and brings them to California. And then she has kids who are at risk of like dropping out of school or going to juvie tame these horses essentially so that they can then stay alive and find homes. The idea of, you know, working in concert with something wild. Any magical practice that increases your will. So choosing a magical practice and then committing to doing it every day for at least a full moon cycle, I think is a big one. Incense or oils, you could use rosemary for concentration. I think that's a good one, a good activator, or cinnamon for raising energy. You can use those both as incense or, you know, drink them. I also love Mary Kay Greer's suggestion about adopting a uniform, because I want a witch uniform because I don't want to constantly think about what I'm going to wear each day.
So speaking of Mary Kay Greer, one of our faves.
I do love her.
I know.
I do
future
love her.
Future spell. Let's get her on
books.
The show.
Oh, yeah.
Mary Kay Greer calls this card the principle of mastery through change. Mm. How much do I love that? And that speaks to your idea around spells, around discipline and focus. You know, I was super lucky to have one of my earliest teachers talk about magic as being a practice and something you do every day. It doesn't mean that you do a huge bombastic spell that has you like sweating and chanting and buying 9 million candles to do. It just means that you have to think of it as a practice and a discipline. And if you're not, or if you've kind of fallen off the libidinous horse, so to speak, and your magical practice, yeah, 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day, 20 minutes a day, just to kind of get yourself back to yourself, calling your energy back. I talk about all the time, but I think that's really important. On that tip, I think about protection spells, right?
Mm, absolutely.
With this card, so protection spells not only for your own energy, but for your home,
car.
Right? You could, your home, your car, yourself, right? So some ingredients that come to mind are salt of any kind, sprinkled outside or inside the four corners of your house or the entire house. I like to do a good old-fashioned tourmaline crystal grid around either, if you live with roommates, your room itself or your entire house, or even the whole outside of your house, to keep the whole outside of your house safe and protected. You know, working with energetic boundaries is really a must for any witch, as we know. But when this card is coming up, how are you protecting your energy field? Are you envisioning like a beautiful rose bush around it? Are you envisioning a nice pink bubble? Are some witches I know talk about zipping themselves up into their cocoon? You know, these are all different ways we can practice this protection energy that's super important, not just when this card comes up, but just as empaths, as psychic human beings in this world. And I'm not going to spend too long talking about this last one. When this card comes up, doing some shadow work, you know, are you afraid of failure? Are you afraid of success? We've done it. I think we've hopped on the chair. I think we've taken a ride through some subjects.
We've gotten back on the horse. And now for the winners of our tarot giveaway.
Hooray. Who'd you get? Who's winning?
I got...
At...
Fancy Jamie, come on down. You have won a tarot reading with the Oracle of Los Angeles. Dun, 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 dun.
Hooray. And drum roll, please. I have gotten at the Vegan Archer. The Vegan Archer, come on down. Pass, go, collect $200. Just kidding. But you will be collecting a 30-minute tarot reading with me. It's just me. My name is just Sarah. That's it. I don't have a fancy name. I don't really have anything. But I'm excited to meet you, and we will be reaching out to you via the interwebs. We just want to give one last huge thank you from the bottom of our hearts to everyone who wrote reviews. We read them out loud. We look at them when we're feeling down. We're so appreciative of your beautiful, kind words. We're so glad that this podcast has resonated with you and it's helped you in any way. And once again, we are just extending pure beams of
love and gratitude.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dun 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 dun
dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun dun